Talk Central is brought to you by BlackBerry.
Hi, this is Diplo. I'm just out there mixing ideas and mixing up different genres. I can't believe that people are actually paying me to travel across the world and build new sounds, different artists. The BlackBerry Torch makes it simple because I'm always staying in touch with everybody, whether it's using Twitter applications or Facebook. A lot of these guys, I have a closer relationship now because I'm constantly on BBM talking to them.
Pop.
I love what I do. And a BlackBerry Torch helps me do it.
Welcome to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod. As usual, I'm here with Candace Jones. Hi, Candace.
Hey, Duncan. How's it going?
Yeah, it's been quite a dramatic week, actually, despite the fact that there's only been 3 work days in it. I must say I'm pretty tired at the moment after we had to deal with a bit of a issue on our server last night, all's back online now, and thanks and credit to the guys at Vox Telecom for getting their engineers out in the middle of the night. Last night to fix the problem.
Yeah, I had an email from you this morning at, I think, 1:30 this morning.
Yes, I think I got about 2 hours of sleep after I sent that email and then was up again this morning, after that at around 4 to continue fighting with the issue. But the good news is it's up and running again, and hopefully that issue is now behind us. It was apparently something to do with a faulty blade server and then an issue with the VMware software in the data center.
But, well, that's technology for
That's technology for you, yeah. If it didn't go wrong, what fun would it be, I guess? Well, I could do with more sleep, I must be honest. I guess the biggest tech news this week isn't actually tech at all. It's really about the royal wedding, although there's a little bit of a tech angle to it. Prince William marrying Kate Middleton. Candace, I know you've been following this much more closely than I have. In fact, I haven't even seen any of the coverage.
Studiously ignoring it.
Yeah, I'm more of the more in the sort of Stephen Fry line of thinking on this one. He's Stephen Fry, of course, the British author and comedian who's been tweeting about some snooker match through the whole wedding, making his feelings about quite well known. But you've been watching it on YouTube.
I have indeed.
And you've been quite impressed with what Google has done with the Royal Wedding YouTube channel. Tell us a bit about what you saw there and...
Well, obviously, I'm interested in the royal wedding since my wedding is coming up in the not-too-distant future, and I've been glued to YouTube this morning using the cellular provider as my internet connection, and it's been an incredible streaming service provided by the BBC and Google. And I'm surprised at how good it is, because I'm expecting that millions of people around the globe are actually watching this via live streaming. And it was really smooth and clear. I mean, there are obviously some hiccups. We are down in the dregs of at the end of Africa, and it's a long way to go to get the video. But I'm impressed. I'm really impressed. I think it's a fantastic move on the part of Google. And I also think, and this is something that I'll be writing about later this afternoon, that the broadcasters should actually be afraid. This model is going to be a good model for Google, and they could really take on broadcasters.
But it only really works around big events like this, doesn't it?
Well, I suppose it does, but that depends on what you're streaming. I saw rumors a few days ago about Google streaming Hollywood movies and that on demand. So, you know, Hollywood movie on demand or the royal wedding,
okay. Going into competition against things like Netflix.
Absolutely. And that's, I understand also that come... Sunday, there'll be Google will also be streaming the beatification of Pope John Paul II, who is heading towards sainthood, and this is one of the first steps of his sainthood. So it's I think that Google is really pushing to take on the broadcasters now, and you know, it's probably a terrifying prospect for broadcasters. The current broadcasting model, let's face it, is broken. It's basically like going to a lunch and being told when and where and what to eat at any given time. It's a hard process, but they have to start facing up to it.
Yeah. I mean, they have. I mean, locally, we've seen DSTV introducing things like the personal video recorder, which has really changed my television viewing, watching experience. I don't watch live television anymore. I simply record, go through the program guide and record what I want, and then when I sit down in front of my TV... I've got the shows that I want to watch. It's really changed that experience. But I suppose the broadcasters are going to have to bring in more of that innovation if they want to compete against the likes of YouTube and Netflix and the rest of them.
Absolutely. But it's going to be a tough, hard road for them to follow, because it's the advertising model around that has to change, and a whole bunch of things need to change for them to get this right and to compete against a massive giant like Google with access to, you know, millions of people and you know, on a daily basis. It's going to be an interesting next couple of years to see how this plays out.
For sure. And yeah, I mean, the broadcasters are going to fight back. I mean, they're well resourced. DSTV Multichoice Group is a hugely profitable group, and they've got the resources they need to take on this challenge.
Absolutely.
And they probably have the fact that our internet is relatively poorly developed in their favour, because they can watch what happens in the US and the Europe and markets where broadband is much more ubiquitous, and actually learn from that experience and see what the broadcasters there are doing and implement the successful options in the South African context.
I think that they also have another advantage in the fact that they have a relationship with MWeb. That sort of internet connectivity aspect of the business could really give them a boost where other broadcasters will battle.
It's really interesting that MWeb was moved into the Multichoice stable. They used to be separate. They used to be under the MIH internet stable. They're now part of the Multichoice group, and it's interesting that NASPASH has decided to do that, because you know, the uncapped MWeb offering is really, in many respects, a competitor to the DSTV service, and will become more so as time goes on. So they're almost creating a situation where the same organization is competing, different parts of the same organization are competing with each other. An interesting model. And
but it's the shape of things to come. You know, the aspect of convergence and specifically broadcast convergence with the internet is going to be huge. And if they could merge the offerings at a later stage, I don't think it'll happen soon, but I think if they merge the offerings at a later stage, that will sort of give them a real advantage in the broadcast space. I mean, at the moment, yes, it's cannibalizing almost off the two businesses. But I don't know. I think that it'll really change the way that people watch TV, and I think people are doing that already. I don't, for example, watch series on TV anymore, because I don't actually want to wait a week before I watch my series. I would rather buy the series in its whole and watch it when I want to, and in that respect I usually buy it and download it. And you know, with things like Mediator and other services, it really works.
Yeah, it's a real proliferation of media options for consumers, whereas in the past you switched your TV on and watched what was given to you. You now have so many different options in terms of online content, although in South Africa it tends to be pirated content because these services aren't available here. But yeah, you're right. I think the era of linear broadcasting is coming to an end.
Absolutely. It's not sustainable anymore. Not with the access options that we have now.
For sure. Cool. Let's move on from the royal wedding and all things royal, and talk about a little bit about Vodacom. They put out an earnings update yesterday, and despite all the intensification of competition in the mobile market and the introduction of new packages, they're expecting a phenomenal set of results, which will be published on May the 16th. Their headline earnings per share will be up between 25 and 30%, which is an amazing performance, I think, given the
competitive market.
Given the fact that this is a mature market, and you know, growth is not as high as it used to be, and the fact that competition is intensifying. I think we may start to only see the full effect of this intensifying competition, particularly in the broadband market, in the next financial year, but certainly Vodacom has turned in good numbers. There is a caveat to that, however, and that's their Gateway acquisition.
Yeah, they've battled with that since the purchase of it. I mean, they've written it down a couple of times, and
they wrote it down by 3.7 billion rand in impairments last year, and they're going to be impairing again to the tune of about 1.5 billion rand in the 2011 financial year, the year to March 31, 2011. And it's very, very clear now, I think, that Vodacom grossly overpaid for Gateway when they bought it a couple of years ago.
It seems that way. It's a pity because I think the Gateway business does have quite a lot of potential in Africa, but I think that they need some sort of direction to push outside of the markets that they're in already. Mm.
I think it's the same situation that Gateway's found itself in that LTEC has found itself in with KDN in Kenya. Where you know their profits have taken a tumble as well. I think what we're seeing across Africa is a fast growing competition, and that's putting massive pressure on margins and therefore on profits. So I think while it's not good news for Vodacom, I think it's good news in the African context because it shows there's this incredible intensification of competition happening across the continent. And of course, Gateway is a pan-African telecommunications provider.
And by the same token, cheaper access and cheaper calls and that kind of thing. Mm. So it is good to see that the competition is growing in the market. But yes, as you say, not a great response for Vodacom. Although Vodacom's results, when they come out, if they manage to produce the numbers that they're predicting in their trading statement, the impact isn't all that large for them. And I'm impressed with what they've put out in terms of their trading statement. If they manage to pull that off, it's incredible.
Their basic earnings are going to be up by around 100%. But that's because of the fact that there was a $3.7 billion impairment in the 2010 financial year, and there's only a $1.5 billion, I say only in inverted commas, impairment in the 2011 financial year because due to Gateway. So the impairment has dropped, which has then obviously boosted by the earnings number.
But well, shareholders were impressed yesterday when Vodacom released those with their trading statement, and the share price started climbing again, and they're looking like a very strong company right now, and I think that the new branding can only give them another boost. So let's see what they come up with at their results, but I think that they're doing very well at the moment.
They certainly seem to be, and everywhere you look now, you just see red.
Which is quite nice, actually. I think I like the new red logo and the new look and feel.
Yeah.
It feels good. It feels clean and solid.
Yeah, yeah. Very European, I think.
Yeah, but again, feels like someone you can rely on. So.
Mm. Okay. So I think the news is certainly they've got consumers most excited this week is the fact that the iPad 2 has finally gone on sale in South Africa. It went on sale this morning, and apparently they're already having stock shortages at some of the stores.
I'm not surprised.
I know. I'm trying to actually get hold of an iPad 32 gigabyte Wi-Fi and 3G model, and they don't seem to have any in stock in black. They have in white, but and I'm sort of humming and hawing about whether I should get the white one instead, but...
Mr. Impatient.
Yeah, Mr. Impatient. Maybe if I wait a week, I get the black one. But it's quite difficult. There's many options available for the iPad 2. I mean, there's six different models. You get the 16, 32, and 64, and each of those is available in Wi-Fi only and Wi-Fi and 3G models. So it's quite difficult to actually decide which one to get. I've been a little reluctant to pay the 1,200 rand extra you pay for the 3G chipset, especially since I have a lot of these sort of MiFi devices lying around, these 3G routers, which provide a personal hotspot and then onward to the cellular networks, data networks. But I was leaning towards getting a Wi-Fi only model. Only model. Now I'm leaning towards getting a Wi-Fi and 3G model, but they don't have the right color I want. So it's all rather difficult.
You're going to have to do a pros and cons list.
But I'm definitely Mr. Impatient because what I actually want is an Android tablet, but there's nothing in the market that really grabs my attention at the moment. So I want a 10-inch model, and I think the Samsung and the... And the other models are some time off yet.
It's interesting to see how few of the Android models have actually made it to market. And in fact, not just...
Well, they've made it to market. They just haven't done very well.
Well, exactly. Mm. But not just Android, the BlackBerry Playbook as well. Apparently, internationally, the sales are tanking.
Mm.
And it's interesting to see that while Apple is still soaring in terms of sales, the others are not doing as well, and it's a wonder. I wonder why. I mean, I haven't had a chance to play with many of them other than the Galaxy Tab, which was A, too small, and B,
half-baked.
It was. It was a rushed out effort to catch the market, which
is what the BlackBerry playbook is looking like as well. I mean, I was reading Walt Mossberg's review in the Wall Street Journal, and he panned it. He said this thing was just taken to market too early. It just hasn't got basic functionality in it, you know, which they're promising in a software update later. But why bring it to market so quickly if the product's not finished?
I think that people forget that because the market changes so quickly, that they have time to bring out a proper, you know, exceptional device, and they don't do that. Instead, they try and rush the market with the tablets that they have, and I don't know. The other thing that I'm annoyed about with the iPad 2 is that it's come out so quickly in South Africa after the iPad 1. Let me tag that with an explanation. I'm pleased that the iPad 2 has come to South Africa so quickly, because we're often on the tip of the continent left out of the grander technology releases and left to wait, like for the iPad 1, for a year for the device. So it's nice to see that the iPad 2 came so quickly. Mm. But at the same time, what about those guys who 2 months ago were buying the iPad 1? It almost reinforced the fact that it felt like Apple was dumping stock.
Yeah, that's true. Well,
and it wasn't only South Africa,
of course. No, obviously. Introduced it in India at the same time, much bigger market than ours. But you're right. But you know, the thing about the original iPad and the iPad 2 is you know, it's a finished product, and too many of these vendors appear to be rushing out products to try and compete in the market, but they're not actually releasing finished products. It's almost like a bug beta products they're pushing out to the market, because they appear to be so desperate to get into this market and to compete. And I think that's a mistake. I think that these companies shouldn't release unfinished products, and should rather wait 6 months. I mean, they're all desperate that they're going to lose market share, and then once people buy, you know, have an iPad, they're not going to move to any other tablet again. But I don't think it's necessarily true if a better offering comes along. I think tablet devices are something that people will upgrade like they upgrade their computers.
Well, that's exactly it. Remember when we had the discussion about Nokia and Microsoft and their partnership, and we believe that, well, I believe that Nokia is not out of the game. Because the technology changes so quickly, it's easy to come up with, well, it's not easy, but it's easier to innovate and bring something, a finished product that's exceptional and does what you need it to do, to the market, and still capture market share. Because people do refresh devices a lot quicker now than they did, say, 5 years ago.
I was reading a very interesting interview yesterday with Stephen Elop, who's the new CEO at Nokia. And what the journalist, I forget which site it was on, but the journalist was asking him what his views are on the tablet space. And his answer was really interesting. He said that they're not going to bring something to market unless they can, and I'm paraphrasing here, bring something that offers something different to what's already in the market. They don't want to bring out a Me Too product, and then he hinted quite strongly that a Nokia tablet it could be a Microsoft-based Windows tablet running the tablet edition of Windows 8,
which I think could take the market by storm. I mean, you look at the current Windows Windows 7, and you look at the applications and the software that are now coming out for Windows, and I'm just seeing so much strength in the software space that I think a tablet could really complement that, a Microsoft-based tablet.
Yeah.
And Nokia obviously has always done exceptional hardware, and you know, if they could bring something out even in the next year and a half, that could knock the socks off the industry.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about Microsoft, but I think we need to take a quick break there. We'll be back right after these messages.
The Vox Superphone and your ADSL line go together like taxis and rush hour. Ah! But we do give a hoot. Now you can use your ADSL for more than just surfing. With the Superphone, you can call any phone, anywhere, using your ADSL line. You save money, earn rebates, and box-to-box calls are free. No contracts, just plug and play. Your ADSL and the Vox Superphone. It's the perfect combination. Make the most of your ADSL. Visit voxsuperphone.co.za.
After the advent of the telephone, it took mankind 70 years to invent the color television. And yet, it only took the next 23 years to invent lasers, the internet, to put a man on the moon. It begs the question, what will the business world be like in the next 23 years? Wherever your business is at, Telkom Business will be there with you. Telkom Business.
Virtual access. ECN's latest cost-saving telecom service. Virtual Access is a single 0860 number, providing your customers with national access to your company, no matter how many branches you have or where your customers are calling from. If you are currently using or plan to use an 0860 number, you need to talk to ECN. Virtual Access is the best price single national number offering in the market. For more, visit ecntelecoms.com. ECN, lowering the cost of doing business.
Welcome back to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Candace Jones. Hi, Candace. So, Candace, we are chatting about Microsoft. I've recently switched back on my desktop from an iMac solution to a Windows 7 desktop, and I'm actually very impressed now using Windows 7 properly for the first time, having used Mac extensively over the last few years, and how the software has actually developed. It's really impressive stuff, and I think that while the world is focused on Apple at the moment, I think there should be perhaps be a bit more attention on Microsoft, because they really seem to have come right in the last little while. They're producing good, solid products. The Microsoft Office Suite 2010 on Windows is absolutely fantastic. I've been using OneNote, which is brilliant software, and it's fast, it's stable, unlike older versions of Windows, and yeah, if they can get it right in the tablet market as well, and that's all going to be, of course, up to Windows 8, and if they can get it right with Nokia and producing really compelling smartphones based on Windows Phone 7, then I think Microsoft may just be back.
I think so. I mean, I'm an avid Microsoft user, have been for quite some time, but I think that they've really come to the fore in terms of their software and their stability, which was a big problem in previous versions of Windows. But what for me I think will be exciting is to see 365, the online solution. I'm still waiting for my invitation, so I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but I'm quite excited to see how it is.
Cloud-based version of Office.
Yeah,
on Google Docs.
I've seen a couple of people and their tweets and their reviews of it, and a lot of people are impressed, saying it's slicker, cleaner, and has a lot more functionality than Google Docs. And, you know, with the cloud being so prevalent in today's day and age, it's really good to see that Microsoft's coming to the fore in that. And hopefully it will have the same stability and the same sort of reliability that the current Windows products do have.
I saw Gartner, I think it was Gartner, saying this week that once the Nokia handsets come to market, their expectation is that Microsoft can quite quickly grab about 25% of the global smartphone operating system market, which would put them in serious contention, probably put them ahead of Apple.
It could very well, bearing in mind that Apple's products are for the higher paying customer.
Very much so, yeah.
Whereas I believe that a Nokia and Microsoft partnership in the smartphone market could bring down the cost of the devices.
The real battle long term, I suspect, is not going to be iOS versus Android. It's going to be Windows Phone 7 or Windows Phone 8, whatever comes next, versus Android.
I think so too. And Android is also looking exceptionally strong. Some of the new devices coming out are incredible. You played with a Motorola not too long ago, which you said was fantastic, and you know, it's a strong contender.
Yeah, there was an Android 2.2 device. That was the Motorola Defy, the waterproof smartphone. Very impressive device and great battery life. I was at an HTC press conference a couple of weeks ago, and they're bringing out the HTC Sensation in June. I think that's going to be my next smartphone. An absolutely beautiful device with a 4.3-inch screen, dual core, 1.2 gigahertz processor.
Sounds like a techie's wet dream.
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of Android. To be honest, I'd rather have an Android tablet than an Apple tablet. But as I said earlier, I'm too impatient.
Well, there's also nothing compelling right now, and until there is something compelling, I'm not going to beat around the bush and try and find one that is.
And the iPad, I mean, Core has really come to the party in terms of pricing on the iPad. The iPad 2 in South Africa is cheaper than many European markets. It's great.
Surprisingly so. And you know, they've kept the basic costs of the original iPad, as far as I can remember.
Yes, that's right.
And I'm impressed. I mean, they brought in the iPad cheaply, the iPad 1, and keeping that price is just, I mean, for the iPad 2 is great. Granted, it's a lot of cosmetic changes to the iPad 2, but...
Oh, sure. Sure.
But I still think it's fantastic, and Core has come to the party. I mean, where years and years ago we were grumbling and whining at how expensive stuff was from the group, it's now really actually stepped up to the plate and taken people's complaints to heart.
Yeah, they've certainly seems to have changed. Even their notebook prices are much more competitive than they used to be.
Which is great news for us as consumers.
Well done to Core.
Indeed.
Great. Well, we don't want this whole show to be hogged by the iPad 2, so let's move on. I want to talk a little bit about New Dawn, which finally went up on Good Friday night here in South African time. This is the new satellite being backed by Convergence Partners, which is Andile Ngcaba's investment vehicle, and Intelsat as the majority shareholder. That was blasted off from French Guiana in South America, I think around 11 p.m. local South African time last Friday night, and it was quite impressive. Quite an impressive sight looking at the pictures and some of the video clips. But the satellite was an Ariane 5 rocket, wasn't it?
It was indeed.
Yeah. It had a payload, apparently the heaviest satellite payload in history, someone was telling me. 10 tons worth of satellites went up on this thing.
Oh.
It's a lot of weight to jump it, to put up into space on a rocket.
You need a lot of rocket fuel.
Absolutely. There was the Yarsat satellite, which is a Dubai-based satellite, which is also going to be serving the South African market. But I think most of the excitement seems to have been around the Convergence Partners Intelsat New Dawn satellite, which is going to provide backhaul television services and broadband connectivity.
Well, it's just a sign that really the satellite market in Africa is still growing strong, which is, I suppose, good news for companies like Gateway, which have satellite services. And I don't know, I think Intelsat, the pictures looked fab. I was really excited to see, I would love to have been there to see the launch, because that's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, but the pictures look great, and look, it's really exciting for Africa to have a fully backed satellite covering the continent.
Yeah, apparently it's really, really difficult to get to French Guiana. I was chatting to Arif Hussein, who heads Fiberco, which is also a company partly owned by Convergence Partners, and he said getting there is an absolute nightmare. You have to go from here to Paris, from where you have to take a chartered flight across the Atlantic to get to French Guiana. Apparently you are so exhausted by the time you get there, it's not funny.
I'm sure.
But Andile Ngcaba is the chairman of Convergence Partners, and the principal shareholders there went to the first launch, which failed. The launch sequence was shut down. And he went again for the successful launch last Friday, so that must have been rather punishing on the travel schedule. But Andile was live tweeting the whole thing, which was absolutely fascinating to watch from his iPad. You can see the records on Twitter if you go to twitter.com/Andile. He's worth a follow. His excitement about the whole thing was quite infectious, I must say.
Well, he's kind of the guy to watch at the moment in the telecom space, isn't he?
He is, yes. In fact, I've just written a column on him. He's really building a lot of telecommunications assets through his Convergence Partners business, Fiberco, which is a joint venture with Internet Solutions, Convergence Partners, and Cell C to build a national fiber backhaul network. Of course, he has a 15% stake in Seacom through Convergence Partners. And New Dawn, so there's a lot of activity going on. Seems almost to me that Mr. Ngcaba is building a new telecommunications network, bit by bit.
Technically he is, they're just not connected yet.
They're just not connected yet, yeah. I mean, he's not doing the retail side of things, the retail consumer side of things, but he certainly seems to be building a powerful wholesale telecommunications infrastructure.
Well, it's interesting to see that a guy like that, with as much investment backing as he's got, putting money into the space and boosting competition, which I think we need at the moment. And it'll be interesting to see how he builds up his little telecoms empire over the next couple of years, if he continues. I mean, there's no saying whether or not Convergence Partners will invest in any other telecoms assets, but at the moment, I mean, it's pretty strong already. So.
Yeah, for sure. Great. Just a couple of last things I wanted to chat about quickly. Garmin's investing in South Africa. They've bought out their local distributors. Candice, you covered that story.
Did indeed.
They're quite a big company, Garmin Distribution Africa.
Yes, they are. They've been doing very well over the last couple of years, promoting Google and Garmin and bringing Garmin products to South Africa. But Garmin's moved to actually buy up the business, and I think they'll be called Garmin South Africa.
Garmin Southern Africa, I think.
Garmin Southern Africa, that's right, once the deal is complete. it's just a sign that South Africa is still a good market for them. And Garmin International has told us that, yes, South Africa is still a growth market while the European and the US markets are maturing. So it's interesting to see them taking on the South African market with vigor.
Okay, cool. So I think just a bit of a fun story that came out this week is that the Civil Aviation Authority is looking at the use of flight mode on devices in SAA aircraft. It surprises me it's taken this long for them to consider this issue. I mean, guys use iPads with 3G connectivity on airplanes, and you don't get taken away. As soon as you take out your iPhone, even if it's in flight mode, and start using it, you get shouted at.
Yeah, I think it's really been a long time coming, and, you know, it's about time, to be honest, and it's good to see that the CAA is getting on board with looking at flight mode. But I still don't think it's as exciting as it should be. I think that what the CAA should be doing, or should have done years ago, was done the flight mode, and now they should be looking at picocells in the planes for wireless access. I mean, those are coming up internationally on international airlines, but you know, South Africa still—they
are looking at it. CAA is looking at it, and there's that deal with Wireless G looking at doing it. I think on Mango aircraft.
I think so, yes. But it hasn't come to anything just yet, and I think this flight mode story might actually be the lead up to wireless technologies. But it's good. It's good that they're testing it. I think they could have actually looked at some of the international testing and realized that yes, they are particularly safe aspects to having a flight mode phone. So, yeah.
I must say, we're not going to mention any names, but Candice, you and I both know her, a technology journalist who regularly flies around the country and the world. And when he gets on the plane, he switches on his MiFi device, puts it in the luggage rack, and carries on surfing the internet on his laptop.
And he does.
He does all the time. And he hasn't crashed any planes yet. So, I don't think it's a serious issue. It's just amazing they've taken so long to approve it.
Big issue was always power, and the further away you are from a tower, the more power your phone uses to access that tower, and that power that's exactly what used to create issues on the navigation systems in airplanes. But that kind of issue has long been resolved with the newer models of phones, and I honestly don't see how it affects it now. To be fair, I don't think it does. I know loads of people who never switch off their phones when they get on an airplane. And I haven't been in an air crash just yet. So although I'm the kind of person who does turn off my phone when I get in an airplane, just to be on the safe side.
Cool. Great. Well, let's call it. Let's wrap it up there, Candice. It's been a very short work week, and we have yet another public holiday on Monday. The last, thank goodness, for a couple of weeks before May the 18th, which is the municipal election. Hopefully we'll get back into the normal swing of things from next week. And I'm not looking forward to the return of the traffic in Johannesburg, but it's been quite pleasant this week. But it's been quite hard getting hold of people the last few days.
It has indeed.
Cool. Candice, let's wrap it up there. And thanks for listening to the show. As always, if you've got any feedback, you can email us at info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, from myself and Candice, cheers.